From a quarantined studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With more than 10 million Americans filing for unemployment benefits in March, the critical question arises, how will they get health insurance during this time of a pandemic when they may need it the most but have the fewest resources? Because the U.S. largely relies on employer-provided health insurance, our model of healthcare is particularly vulnerable to the crisis we're now facing. Add to that the fact that the health insurance industry is set to sharply increase its premium prices, and that thousands of healthcare workers are facing layoffs and furloughs as routine patient visits drop off, and we might be witnessing a system on the verge of collapse. My guest is Paul Song. He's a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for Healthy California, and on the board of Physicians for National Health Program. He's also our healthcare correspondent. Welcome back, Paul.
Always great to be back.
So first, let's talk about those people who have lost their jobs and what all of this means for them at a time when they need their healthcare the most, assuming they had it to begin with. This is when millions have likely lost access to healthcare or may lose it once their, you know, COBRA provisions expire. They don't have too many choices, right?
Well, this is the fallacy of the whole employer-sponsored healthcare system that we have, where the majority of Americans do get coverage through their employer, but once they lose their jobs, if they do not have a paycheck, which unfortunately a lot of these people that recently filed unemployment do not, then even if they were offered COBRA, which is an extension of their healthcare plan for which they now have to pay a certain amount and the employer still pays some for up to a year, a lot of these people don't have the means to pay their rent, let alone healthcare. So unfortunately, they're not going to take advantage of the COBRA provision, and the majority of these people will be now uninsured or have to try to apply for Medicaid, which is already an overstretched system in most states, and particularly in those states that did not expand Medicaid, most notably the red states. This is really going to put a strain on healthcare systems throughout.
Now, so ordinarily people would be able to apply, certain people if they meet the conditions would be able to apply for Medicaid, but there have been a number of, especially Republican governors that have refused to expand their Medicaid programs because of a political reason, to basically be against the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, but no real practical reason. They may be regretting that right now. And also, in addition to that, I understand that President Trump refused to authorize a special enrollment period in order for people to be able to enroll in healthcare.gov online, right?
Yes, so a lot of the states decided to reopen the enrollment in the Affordable Care Exchange. Exchanges, unfortunately, rather than making this federal, President Trump, as you mentioned, has failed to do so, and it's really up to states to reopen this. Again, the problem with that is this is, remember, the exchange provides subsidies for people between 138% and 400% of the poverty level. And unfortunately, as people lose their jobs, they're no longer having any income, and they would not technically qualify for the exchange. If they are not generating any income anymore, then they are technically eligible for Medicaid. But for those people that maybe have been furloughed and are now working part-time instead of full-time and still making too much that they don't quite qualify for Medicaid, it's really going to be difficult for them, even in states like California that have opened up the exchanges, because they just don't have the money to pay the monthly premiums. And this is really, again, exposing what's wrong with our healthcare system, that so much of it is tied to our unemployment, where if we had a Medicare single payer system, we would not have to worry about losing our job, that you would always have coverage.
So that's where Americans who've been unemployed are. But what a lot of people aren't realizing is that there are also thousands of healthcare workers that are in a similar situation, as well as medical students, because routine patient care has declined precipitously since the quarantine orders in various states. Those nurses and doctors that were, you know, I guess, suppose maybe like pediatricians and others who may not be useful or may need to be retrained in order to help out with the coronavirus patients, they're being furloughed and laid off and are losing health insurance themselves. How serious a problem is this?
It's really serious. So while you have the people that are working on the front lines that are overstretched, meaning in the ERs, in the ICUs, in the testing clinics, you do have other medical professionals in fields that are still serious, but where they have eliminated elective procedures and surgeries and such, whether it be somebody who needed a hip replacement or somebody who needed to have some sort of colonoscopy. They have eliminated many of those right now because of the trying to keep the hospital as free and open as possible. And then the doctors who own and operate their own clinics, because they're not seeing patients, they're not able to maintain paying for their staff, and they themselves have seen a precipitous drop in their own revenue and income because they're not seeing patients. So this is really escalating beyond just the traditional blue-collar jobs. This is really affecting the healthcare industry as much. It's ironic in that you have one aspect of the healthcare system that is so overstretched, and then another aspect that is completely, for all sake, being shut down. And these people have bills, they have to pay rent, they have to pay all of the associated costs of trying to keep their practice open, and they just can't. And as a result, they're furloughing their workers and themselves. And so this is really a major, major problem.
So in order to deal with this, one governor has decided that an option is to temporarily approve immigrant visas for doctors from outside the country. This is Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey. He signed an order to give a temporary license to immigrant doctors. I mean, in general, we do have a shortage of doctors in the U.S., right? And it's quite ironic to see the country now call for immigrants when for the past 3 years we've been so unfriendly to immigrants, you know, to say the least.
The thousands of healthcare providers in the United States who were trained as physicians back in their native countries, but when they came to the United States and had to take the U.S. exam, either due to decreased language proficiency or some other situation, were unable to qualify to have their medical license transferred over. But a lot of these people are working as physician's assistants. Some of them are working in nursing homes as orderlies because they want to just have jobs. And these are highly qualified people that now will be given the opportunity in the state of New Jersey to practice medicine for which they were trained. And I think this is a good thing. I also think that if these doctors really step up, that they should be people, the state should continue to work with them to bring them into the full-time fold. But as you know, New Jersey, secondary to New York, and probably because of the close proximity, is really experiencing a catastrophe there as well in terms of the sheer overwhelming of the system. So this is very much a desperate measure, but I think one that can take advantage of a relatively skilled workforce that has not been given the chances to work as physicians in the United States.
I should mention that Cuba has a tremendous army of doctors that it sends around the world and is continuing to do so during this time of coronavirus. And of course, the U.S. would be, especially under Trump, far too proud to accept help from Cuba if it was offered. What do you make of New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's, you know, very interesting idea that he, I guess, is expressing out of desperation in calling for a national enlistment of healthcare workers? He, on Friday, says that the U.S. military should organize and mobilize healthcare workers from around the country, sort of like an army mobilizes troops, and send them to the front lines of wherever this disease is being fought the hardest. And in this case, I'm assuming it would be New York City. I'm not sure exactly how such a system would work, but what do you think of this as a doctor yourself?
Well, Governor Newsom here has done that here in California, where he's asked all healthcare professionals to sign up for a state-based registry, whether or not you are retired or working part-time, of which I have signed up, and several of my colleagues have also signed up. And the idea is that you can mobilize these doctors to hotspots and areas for which there aren't enough staff. I do know that there are a lot of doctors and nurses and healthcare providers that have voluntarily relocated to New York to help out. New York has waived
Wow.
sort of their medical license requirements. So right now, I only have a medical license in California, but New York is allowing people from other states who are licensed to come in and to practice to help out. So I do think that states are doing this already and setting up a large amount of registry. Los Angeles County has done so, as well as the state of California. I think Governor Newsom announced there was some staggering amount of volunteers. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, about 60,000 people that have volunteered here in the state of California. So I do think that maybe it's not quite necessary for the government or the military to mobilize this. I do think you have a lot of healthcare providers who are willing to get involved and are signing up for registries. And that is the first step so that as shortages emerge, we know where we can then send these volunteers to go, including people like myself.
Medical students say that they are willing to step up. There was an interesting piece on slate.com where I believe it was written by a medical student who said that many are willing to go to the front lines, but we need pay and protection. They want tuition refunded, they want health insurance to be provided. This is similar to some healthcare workers who are already working, such as nurses and doctors, who say that they want hazard pay. When we have such important workers whose lives and whose vocations are so important right now, the government should be throwing money at them. Instead, of course, Trump meets with CEOs of oil and gas companies. But it seems to me as that the demands of medical students are quite reasonable and should be met, right?
Well, I think it's a fine line. So you have to realize medical students are not officially doctors yet. They have not even done their internships. I do know that NYU has offered to let fourth-year medical students graduate early and immediately start working at their clinics. If they're willing to work in their clinics, that they will let them graduate early. Obviously, pay for a residence and house staff is quite low compared to once you finish your training. And I'm not sure I would agree that they should be having these regular doctor salaries because they're just getting out of training. They're not even finishing training yet.
I'm not sure if
But
they're
having
asking for
said,
regular doctor salaries. I think they're just asking for health insurance, for tuition to to help with their debt of their student loans, etc.
I think the whole issue of student debt and loan forgiveness is something that I'm in favor of, but I don't think this is the opportunity that I would say as a medical professional and why we went into medicine to now negotiate that as part of our initial calling to serve people. I do think that at some point that should be taken up, but I think right now they should obviously get coverage. Health insurance, they should get a fair salary. And then we can look at, as this crisis drags on longer, what they can do with tuition. Certainly, I know medical school tuitions are outrageous and people are graduating with huge amounts of debt. But I don't think using this crisis, it just, for me, it's a little off-putting as a healthcare provider. That's not why we went into medicine to begin with. And I don't think that should be what we should be negotiating right now. I do think we should be using as many able bodies and minds and protecting them and taking care of them as possible to address this crisis. And then we can address the whole issue of outrageous medical school tuitions at a later point.
Is it possible for those healthcare workers that have been furloughed because routine patient visits have dropped off to be retrained and asked to sort of voluntarily switch their job descriptions to participate in the coronavirus crisis, because it seems bizarre that we have a scarcity of healthcare workers at the same time that thousands of healthcare workers are being furloughed or laid off.
Absolutely. I think that there are some unique skills and experience that comes from just working in an emergency room year after year or an ICU. But if you are somebody that has gotten a nursing degree or a medical degree, physician's assistant degree, you can easily be brought up to speed with a lot of the less critical aspects of staffing an emergency room or an ICU. But I do think that there can absolutely be fill-in and much-needed fill-in with these people that have been displaced.
This is such a trying time for healthcare workers, and I want to emphasize that these are human beings. These are our best hope to emerge from this alive. These are the people who are basically doing the battle against this virus on behalf of the majority of us. And many of them, particularly in New York, are seeing very difficult situations. How important is it for us to understand the mental health impact of what doctors and nurses and other healthcare providers are experiencing at this moment? I can't even imagine.
I've talked to a few of my colleagues who are emergency room physicians, or another doctor who runs a pulmonary care unit in Boston, and he said that right now they're just on survival mode. And it's almost as if they're becoming numb, but at some point they believe that once we are through this, that there will be a lot of post-traumatic stress, a lot of need for mental health counseling, that needs to be done right now. But to be honest, my colleagues say that they're just so exhausted, they want to come home and sleep, catch up, make sure they're not infecting their family members, and then go back to the grind. But I do think that this is going to result in a lot of post-traumatic stress that is going to last for a long period of time, and these people are going to need the necessary care and support moving forward. But I do know that most of the colleagues that I've talked to are just on survival mode right now.
And these are people who have families and children like themselves and are probably terrified of bringing home infection. There's some heartbreaking videos on social media of doctors, you know, having to completely strip down their personal protective equipment, while their children are waiting to hug them at the end of the day. So this is a really critical issue as well. And all of this is happening at the same time where there are nurses and doctors in some parts of the country that don't even have the masks, gloves, and gowns that they need to protect themselves and other patients. I cannot imagine what it must be like to be a healthcare worker in this richest of all countries and have this ridiculous shortage. Much has been made, of course, of the politics around this shortage. But as a doctor, how heartbreaking is it for you to see people having to stretch their PPE resources to the limit?
It's really, really sad. And I've talked to some of my friends who were down working at Dignity California Hospital and elsewhere at the Eisner Clinic. And they said that they've never seen a situation this bad. And a lot of them have volunteered and gone and done medical tours in underprivileged countries. And they feel like, to some degree, this is like practicing in a third world country right now, except they're putting their lives at risk each day. Sadly, I think that this is something that has been a colossal failure, not just by the federal government, but by state governments as well. I think that there's been a lot of finger pointing. And what I try to tell people right now, it's not the time to point fingers. We can do a big post-mortem evaluation of what we did right, what we didn't do right, after we've come together and solved this crisis. But I do think right now we are starting to see more masks being delivered. But to some degree, for those people that have been on the front lines and infected, it's too late, right? They've already paid the toll of not being prepared, and yet they go and do their job day after day after day.
Paul, you're an oncologist. What about those patients who have ongoing cancer treatments? What about those patients who have, medical issues that may not be immediately life or death, but who are relying on their care resuming? I mean, I'm also thinking of expectant mothers whose due dates might be coming up soon and are terrified of no hospital beds available to them. It's a very trying time.
Absolutely. I will say this from a cancer perspective that the cancer industry or field has continued to operate as normal, just practiced more social distancing guidelines, not putting patients as close together, staggering when patients come in and out of the office. But I do know that patients are still getting chemotherapy, patients are still having radiation, and then while some of the surgeries have been delayed, those that have really emergent cancer needs that require surgery are having the surgeries done. So, at least among cancer, I can tell you that it's trying to operate as normal as possible, but just within the guidelines of trying to greatly minimize any risk of exposure, both to patients who many times their immune systems are weaker because of the chemotherapy or radiation that they're getting, and also to the providers who are wearing gowns or wearing gloves and masks. I do have a colleague in Chicago who treats, he's a radiation oncologist like myself, and he, one of his patients tested positive for COVID-19, but still, because of the aggressiveness of his cancer, needs to come in for treatment. So they've had him gown up coming in and all the staff gowns up. And they try to treat them at the end of the day when there are no other patients in the office. But these are the ways that we are still trying to accommodate treating people that have cancer because cancer doesn't wait for a virus to dissipate.
Right. And cancer patients, those with other pre-existing conditions like diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, are particularly vulnerable to this particular pandemic through this virus, which of course makes social distancing for the rest of us so much more important. Well, finally, Paul, I want to just ask you your general thoughts on the government's response or lack thereof. I'm sure you've been thinking every day about the claims that President Trump has made about how fantastically he's doing and that he's trying to convince us that a minimum of 100,000 dead Americans this year from the pandemic with social distancing in place is somehow supposed to be a victory for him.
Well, again, I think it's unfortunate that there has to be politics at a time when we as a country need to be focusing on one, each of us doing our part through social distancing to minimize the spread and exposure of this, but also that we need to be doing everything to get the necessary supplies that our frontline workers need. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time really going after the president right now. I do think if you look here in California, it was clear that Governor Brown eliminated all the stockpiles we had here with ventilators and things for budgetary reasons. So as I say, I think once we're all said and done, there's a lot of blame and share of blame that we can assign. But I do think what's important is that you do have the president. It seems like he's listening more and more to his scientific team, to Dr. Fauci, to Dr. Birx, to others that are really, remember, he was initially going to try to open things up by Easter, but has since not only backtracked, but has really started to push for social distancing, although he's not mandating it state by state. I think what everyone needs to do is really pay attention to the experts who are trying to be apolitical and just give straight answers. One thing I will say that I do want to applaud Governor Newsom on is he was really the first to institute this shelter-at-home policy far earlier than really what's happened in New York and elsewhere. And I think what we're seeing is so far, fingers crossed, is that our overall infection rate and death rate is not rising nearly at the levels of New York, New Jersey, or Europe. So I do think that for those listeners who are paying attention, that it's working, and I would ask each and every one of you to continue the social distancing, and really try to put pressure on your friends, family, and neighbors to do the same, because that's the only way that we can reduce the risk to our front line workers who do not have the necessary equipment. Is the lower that we can bring the infection rate down by keeping our distance, the better we're going to help everyone.
Paul, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate all that you do.
Thank you so much, and please, everyone, be safe.
My guest has been Paul Song. He's a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for Healthy California, and on the board of physicians for National Health Program. He's also our healthcare correspondent. We've been discussing the state of the healthcare industry in the era of the coronavirus. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.